Hello.
And welcome to the podcast where we talk about who makes the best evil queen in town. You should see the other guy. Oh. Where today we are quickly discussing Disenchanted before its events slip straight out of all of our brains. I am, you know, maybe it's because we weren't the direct magic users. In fact, they explained that to everyone else, it was just like a dream.
That's true. That is in there.
Wow. Jen, you've already absorbed more about this movie than
I forgot that the wand was involved.
That was at the very end. That was one of the many magical explanations of the movie that happened right in the last 3 minutes of the film.
Yeah, there was the world building came in late.
It did.
I am Jennifer.
I am Samantha.
And I am Sadie.
And today we're joined by...
Already talking. Sorry.
Special recurring guest, Madeline Q. Myers, host of the Triple Click podcast, among many other notable accomplishments.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me back for this movie that upset me the first time I watched it and then upset me again when I watched it a second time today for the podcast. Listeners may recall that my first appearance on this show was for the Enchanted episode because that's one of my favorite movies ever. I have seen it many, many, many times and I have no regrets. I love it to this day. This movie undoes some of my favorite things about Enchanted, plot-wise, logic-wise.
As it should.
And also is just not that great of a movie. But I'm staking my claim early. I'm saying I didn't like it. I don't know what everybody else thinks.
Samantha did name herself, this movie was bad, in the chat.
Yeah,
so I'm getting the sense.
Spoilers.
I'm shocked. I'm already mad. We haven't even summarized the film yet. I'm already mad. I'm shocked that this film largely got like 3.5 out of 5 style reviews. Like, it's like a lot of people just saw it as an easy 7 out of 10. It was streamed by tons of people the first weekend. It had a great record
that makes
for that.
Sense.
Yeah, because, you know, families are bored. It's a family
movie. You expect
movie.
It to be happy
and
good. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but I feel like it's so bad, and I feel crazy that people liked it at all because it makes no sense, and nothing that happens in the movie should happen. Like, everything is undone. It's like the only motivation for any of the events of the film to occur are like a brief case of existential crisis. Like, it's like there's no, none of this needed to happen, you know? Like,
Giselle really needs to confront that evil stepmother thing a little more because, frankly, that was just an evil mother move to steal her infant daughter's wishing wand to further the plot at that point. She was like suffering from a bad case of main character syndrome, which I suppose fits since she is like the main character of the movie. But
of course, that's true. But then also the Nancy and Philip show up and gift a wand to the new baby and are kind of rude to the older teenage daughter for no reason in a way that seems out of character for both of them and bizarre. So it's like in order to justify the plot of the movie, characters have to behave against type repeatedly. I mean, I don't know. We can get into it. It was a rough hang. Though.
Okay. So I watched this.
Sorry, I'm coming in so hot. It's because I literally just finished watching it, like mere moments ago. Credits were rolling, and I'm
watched
so you're
it a
getting
week ago,
me
and I still feel bad
mad.
About it.
Yeah,
It felt like a Disney Channel show. Like someone once was babysitting or something, and I saw like 10 minutes of that. Show about the kids of the villains.
Wizards of Waverly Place.
Oh, The Descendants.
Oh, sure. Yep.
Yeah. And production wise,
it gave
just
me those
general
vibes.
like feel and look mm-hmm. and writing and songs. This felt like 4 episodes of that, like chained together.
I have only ever seen trailers for that show, and I 110% agree with you on that because it just feels so phoned in. Could not believe that Alan Menken was the composer on these songs. Alan Menken, notable for composing for Enchanted, but also The Little Mermaid, Hercules, fucking Little Shop of Horrors, one of the greatest musicals of all time, catchiest songs ever. And the man phoned it in. He was just like, Love Power? Is that anything? Yeah, that's a song.
Oh, yeah. You just made me remember that the whole final song was about Love Power.
Love Power. Or whatever. I don't even. Terrible. Terrible.
I think
they did Idina Menzel so wrong, by the way, because she didn't get to sing in the first movie, and then they punished her a second time by giving her the worst songs this time around. It's like, why are you doing this to her? Like,
she was terrible. Belting so hard in this movie that even with the volume turned down, like, I felt rattled sitting, like, I felt like my ears hurt.
Disturbed, even though, yeah.
It was just
she
the
was
energy
singing for
of,
dear
of
life.
The singing.
They should have just let her do Let It Go again.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Why not?
They own it, you know? Just let her do the same thing again. That's fine. They own it. They own every Disney song. It should have just been a jukebox musical where they just sang stuff from The Little Mermaid or whatever. And they were like, don't worry about it. Part of Your World, that's in there now. Let It Go, we're throwing that in. I Just Can't Wait to Be King. Sure, that's in here too. Whatever, it's fine.
That could have been the son of the Evil Queen. Damn.
They should have had Giselle going to a suburban Costco and she can stand beneath the sign for Costco and sing Under the Sea.
Oh my God. All right, let's pack it in. The episode's not going to get any better than that. I feel like we've done it. incredible.
Samantha, you should be a script doctor.
Yeah. I just wanted to hear good songs. Just like, I don't care how shoehorned they have to be. Just put them in.
Just one good song. There's no song in this movie that's good. I would say the song that is even slightly approaching good is the Two Evil Queens song.
Yes.
But even that... Yes. I'm so mad at how many characters and contrivances are in the film and that they dared to lampshade that by writing a song about how stupid it is for there to be two villainous queens in the movie. So to do that and then have that song be kind of okay is also still insulting to me because it's like they left nothing on the cutting room floor at all. Like you can feel the development hell of this movie just bringing it backwards in every possible respect.
That song really was the best because of the charisma of both singers, obviously. Mm-hmm, I would, you know, mm-hmm. them playing off of each other. But it did really stand out to me that they forced poor Amy Adams to sing the word bladder, like, to rhyme it with batter. Mm-hmm. And she did it because she is a true professional.
Yeah. There was another one that was like flabbergaster or something. There were some weird rhymes in that song. But like watching the subtitles, I was like, Alan Menken, buddy, you gotta slow down. Like, or retire. I don't know. I'm calling it. Alan Menken, retire, bitch. You're one of my favorite composers. And yet... You betrayed me.
I remember none of recording the show, but I do feel like on the first Enchanted episode, Maddie, I brought up that I found Alan Menken's rhymes in the first Enchanted to be starting to go in a wonky direction.
Yes, yes, you did. Yes. And I think you're right.
Because in the first Enchanted, now.
You pointed out that Amy Adams' character Giselle was like capable of knowing what a vacuum was according to like the rhyming lyrics of the cleaning song, but then like outside of that song didn't know what basic household appliances were, and like that was something that really broke your immersion. I remember that, but it was like for the sake of like a weird rhyme scheme that needed to be upheld. And I don't know, you can definitely feel that in this movie, but I guess should we summarize it? I feel like we dragged us so far off the rails.
We've already gotten to Alan Menken, retire, bitch.
Well, we can't. Well, we're going to have a tough time picking alternate love interests. I mean, part of the reason I picked Enchanted for my first appearance is because there are multiple love interests. Yeah. I felt like it was a great choice for this specific show. And this movie we're really just doing because it's the sequel. But it doesn't, I mean, the love story, there truly isn't one. Like, both characters are so underdeveloped that it's comical that at the end, Morgan is theoretically dating someone.
Yeah, they don't. I don't know. I was so disappointed by this. Like, I feel like it could have gone. Literally, I'm going to give like a 2-sentence summary. Like, I think that that's
good luck. Cause again, there's needed. A lot of contrivances. So I'm excited to hear what the 2 sentences are.
Well, okay. Sentence one, Giselle has been living in New York for quite some time and they are very happy, but they have a baby. And for some reason, the only solution is not just like find a larger apartment in New York City, which they seem to be happy in. And their daughter, Morgan, who is now grown up, especially seems to be happy in, but they're like, no, we're going to move to some middle of nowhere town and uproot her while she's in high school.
Yeah, 15 years old.
She's terrible time to have to be happy with that.
I had a West
like,
Covina
just
moment
two
with the
years
billboard.
For her to go to college. Like, what are you doing? Anyway, go on.
Yeah, I know. I literally don't understand it at all. So they get there and Giselle's very much like, this is going to be happy and perfect and whatever. And then Morgan says one thing where she's like, you're not my mom. And of course, Giselle is like, oh, I hate that. And I'm not going to dive deep into the nuances of like being a stepmom and like what that means. And that she's literally just probably having a hard time adjusting to the fact that she has been uprooted for seemingly no reason.
Yep.
And like everyone is inconvenienced except Giselle, literally everyone. Yes. And so Giselle gets a magic wand that lets her make a wish, and she wishes that this world were a fairy tale, but then it ends up being
the worst.
Confined within fairy tale tropes.
Makes her life like, significantly worse in literally every way, and it was already bad for everyone else except for her, but now it's also bad for her. Go on.
And Maya Rudolph, who is kind of like the PTA mom of the small town, becomes the evil queen. Giselle finds herself slipping into the role of the evil stepmother, and her daughter Morgan kind of becomes the Cinderella type figure, the Giselle type figure. A bunch of shit happens that literally I don't remember. I don't care to remember. It's fine. They fix things, and then the wand, it's only supposed to be used by like a true Andalasian, which is like where Giselle is from, but then Morgan is able to use it because she's Giselle's daughter, even though she's not biological, and it's like this moment that like I get what they're trying to do
because
but
of love power
flat
love power
because of love power
love power
and yeah, that's it. And then at the end, they don't move back to New York.
I know.
They continue
they stay
to stay
in Monroeville or whatever.
They met a cute boy with a terribly overbearing mom, and suddenly she's fine now. So memory tree, love power.
Yeah, there's also a memory tree. There's multiple magical objects for some reason. There's animated sequences.
But Pip is back.
Oh, yeah, the chipmunk, and he's a cat for part of it.
Yeah, he turns into a cat.
Yeah.
Because cats are evil, and chipmunks are cute and good. And I don't know, guys. I don't know.
They were pretty rough on stepmothers and cats. It's true.
Well, see, that was the part that I was like, there's some interesting territory to be mined here, where it's like, okay, like Giselle comes from this world where all fairy tale tropes are real, and that's her only way of interfacing with reality. Like, how does that affect her life now that that's no longer her situation? And is that what the movie is about? And is it trying to say something about how these tropes can actually be really damaging? But it's almost like they don't have time to get to that because there's so much other shit in here that I don't know why it's there. Like, there's so many other characters. I don't know. It feels like the movie went through a lot of rewrites, and it did. I know that it did.
It's, you know, you're so right. Like, I mourn what this movie could, not to be fucking dramatic, but I mourn what this movie could have been. Like, like when I first saw what the title was going to be, I was like, this is going to be cool. Like, this is genuinely going to be really fascinating. And, like, there's so many ways that you could, oh my God. I'm so sorry if you can hear my cat absolutely tearing it up in this bedroom right now. She's having a fun time. But anyway, you know what? Cats are evil. They're right.
Disenchanted. You should have gotten a chipmunk. That would have been a perfect pet with no problems. But you got a cat for some reason.
Sure.
But anyway, like, they could have explored it in so many different ways, and especially the stepmother element of it. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that they could have done that in a really interesting way, but I feel like they just kind of landed in the same weird tropes where it's like, in order to actually have a happy situation and a happy family, the stepmom needs to be considered to be like the mom. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's not accurate. Like, I just, like, that was so tiring to me. Like, I was like, you can have multiple moms, you can have a stepmom, mm-hmm. and it's fine. Like, I just don't get it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
it's tough. And it's also tough that, okay, so because there's this additional Maya Rudolph character, I feel like they were also trying to go for something there where they were like, okay, Maya Rudolph is the PTA mom. She has her little minions who follow her around and do everything she wants. She's like the popular mom at school, whatever. She's overbearing. Her son is the one who Morgan falls in love with at the end. So, like, for one thing, you can show that a mom can be overbearing all on her own without needing to be a stepmom, not something they get into. That's fine. The other thing, though, that I thought they were trying for and also failed at was the idea that by the end of the movie, Amy Adams and Maya Rudolph could actually be friends and could, like, come together over the fact that they both really like crafts. They both really like organizing stuff. They're both, you know, moms, and that's their full-time job, and that's their whole situation in life. And that is just a plane that they don't land. Like, they instead keep Maya Rudolph mean throughout the entire movie. Like, she's mean ahead of time. She's mean when she's the evil queen. And then after the spell's broken, she's still kind of mean, but is given one line to Amy Adams where she's like, yeah, I guess we're friends. And then, like, kicks out one of her minions to, like, give Amy a chair or something. And it's just like, are we just saying this woman's
you
evil?
You can join the,
like,
plastics now.
What's the lesson here? Like, because that seems terrible. And also, Morgan, I don't know. This is totally out of order. But my other problem is Morgan gets, like, the little princess I want song when she's in the fairy tale world. And I feel like that song sums up so many of the problems with the movie, because it's about absolutely nothing. Like, what does Morgan want as a character? The song will never tell you. It's just her being like, I want to be a good person. Like, the lyrics are just insipid nothingness somehow. Like, do any of you remember the song that I'm talking about where she's sort of walking around and... You probably don't, because it's completely forgettable. No. But it's like,
this
you
movie
know,
is
you
like
know
a
how.
Sin.
Well, but, like, you know how every princess in a Disney movie has the I want song, where, like, you know, Ariel wants to be part of the human world. You know, Belle wants adventure in the great wide open somewhere, whatever she sings. You know what I'm saying. And, like,
is it that she's mildly rebellious? Was that the theme slash tone of that song?
Yes. It was sort of like, there was a line, I think, about her wanting adventure, but she just kind of wants her stepmom to lay off her a little bit, really was the ultimate message. Yeah. Like,
it's like, does she want adventure? Does she want a relationship?
Her whole thing was about where she wanted to go back to where she fit in. And then suddenly it's,
but we never see Morgan's New York friends, but for some reason we're introduced to all these randos on the train with Robert every morning. Like, why are they characters in the movie? I can't.
So, that's the Dempsey.
The train passengers.
I cannot. They are in the film as well. Why?
Patrick Dempsey is just not a person with a talent for goofiness. Like,
no.
This movie kind of brought back to me that other movie we watched for the podcast in the way back, where it was him versus Kevin McKidd in, like, an Irish castle. And Patrick Dempsey was asked to do, like, wacky things.
Man
and
of Honor?
Yes. Oh,
Man
it was wretched.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's Maid of Honor, but M-A-D-E, right?
Oh,
it's like
yeah,
a play on
it.
Words
that's
or something?
It. Yes.
Terrible.
And, God, he wasted some time in this one because they had to give him something to do to set up. Because I did like that little touch at the end where they got around the spell. Because I kind of like, you know, fairy rules being, like, by the wording. But because they stopped it from being the stroke of midnight by literally physically stopping the clock from moving. You know, it doesn't like halt
with
the passage
their
of time, but it like satisfied the rules, you know? So I thought that was cool. But poor Patrick Dempsey trying to pretend he was James Marsden and fight a dragon was just painful. Like, just
let James
Marsden do those scenes, you know? And, like, leave Patrick Dempsey alone. He tried to sing. He really put his all into it, but... bless his heart. It's,
his storyline also deeply upsetting because it doesn't get resolved. Yeah. Like, he is also the character who has to admit to Giselle, like, I hate riding a train to work for hours and hours every day and not seeing my family. And I feel like everything in my life is cold and empty and meaningless. And she's like, cool, cool, cool. And then, like, at the end of the movie, that's not resolved. Like, what? Like, that's not solved at all. Like, he just
So, though they dropped in a little line in, like, the postscript that he started a small practice in town and never rode the train again. And then it's like, problem's done.
Yeah, he doesn't get to be a high-powered New York attorney. He gets to have a different, completely different range of clientele and different and
probably
job.
Probably a massive pay cut.
Yeah.
Their whole money situation did not make a lot of sense to me. I was confused about that.
As I recall, he was a divorce attorney, which was why he was so cold and pessimistic about marriage and love in the first movie, and also rich. So that makes sense. You know, if you're, you know, a divorce attorney working for rich people in Manhattan, then it makes sense that you have a pretty nice apartment, et cetera. But it doesn't make sense that you would then presumably do a different form of law. I don't know how many divorces there are in Monroeville. It seems like 12 people live there. So I don't know. I don't know enough about
this massive house there. And then James Marsden and everybody turns up and calls them poor a bunch. That was strange. So y'all, I have been watching.
It's like my dream home.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Monroeville is also drenched in permanent sunlight. Like, this is so clearly a Southern California soundstage. Yeah. And part of what made Enchanted, like, so fun to watch is, like, so much of it was shot on location. And it felt like, oh, I'm in the Northeast. I'm like in New York City. And then
the overstimulation of 42nd Street and all of that is like, it's really there. You can't recreate 42nd Street anywhere else. You have to actually go there and do that in order for that scene to land. And this is just, I don't know.
It reminded me of the most recent episode of The Last of Us, if anyone else is tuning in, where they put it's like 10 miles west of Boston.
Yeah, and
it
literally looks like, and it's like gorgeous.
Washington
and it's like,
State,
no, that's, like, I'm sorry. I'm from Massachusetts. That's not what it looks like here. It's, I don't have a canyon.
It'd be 10 miles west of Boston and then a dilapidated Dunkin' Donuts.
Yes! There should have been several dunks punctuating that entire episode and every episode of that show, honestly. If I'm supposed to believe it's a post-apocalyptic Boston, got to put some dunks in there. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah, same energy. I wrote down, as I was watching this, I wrote down two things that I thought at the time would be like key. They're not. I need to... The first thing that I wrote down is, this is WandaVision, but for gayer people than Marvel's fans.
Yes. Okay. I thought of WandaVision too.
That's valid, Sadie. I did as well.
I thought of WandaVision too, and I was like, what is up with this? But okay, I think WandaVision had a lot of problems, but it's perfect compared to this movie in terms of like instruction and logic. At least it made sense. This, I'm like, I don't know why any of this happened.
Just like the necessity. I mean, we can we'll get into this in a second, but like, I've been noticing this weird trend of like putting out sequels that are like 10, 15, 20 years in the making, or like, you know, from things that are 10, 20 years old. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, why would you bring this? Why would you revive this in any way when it's objectively so much worse? Like, I'm thinking of Hocus Pocus 2.
Yes.
With this as well.
Yep.
Which was not up to snuff and was not well made.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like it had a low budget. And I was like, this?
Also a Disney Plus outing, by the way.
Yeah. Why make this at all? And I know that the answer is just like any type of cash grab. But it's like, if you're going to do it, at least do it right in terms, like, even if the plot sucks, like, just make the production value good and make it shot on set. Like, I just don't understand. So that's number one. The exception to that is Puss in Boots: The Last Wish, mm-hmm. which is a fantastic film, was well worth the wait. I am campaigning for it to win Best Animated Picture at the Oscars. That is all I will say.
But also, is it DreamWorks and not a Disney, right? I'm always getting mixed
up. It's DreamWorks.
Yeah.
Yes,
right.
It is.
Got it.
That's the key difference. Yeah. And then the second thing that I wrote down was, well, it's better than Camila Cabello's Cinderella. So, because it gave me similar energy, and also had Idina Menzel in it.
Yeah,
but oof. Was better. This was better at all. And you know that is not a low. You know, it's low bar, but you know, it's still at least it met that criteria.
Haunted by the Camila Cabello clip of her and James Corden and Billy Porter stopping traffic to like. Do Broadway
I know
numbers?
What you're talking about. It was like a flash mob form of advertising that they did, where they were like performing songs from Cinderella, but like in the highway in LA. I guess I don't know where they actually
you're
were.
Like, but stopped in traffic, and James Corden pops up and starts singing and dancing next to your car.
Just unbearable.
James Corden dressed as a mouse.
Unacceptable in every way. Finding out that he was straight, I'm not over it.
I was going to say that. I was
found
like,
that
my
information
life was ruined.
Chilling. Like, truly chilling. Like, the man has been playing gay for so long that I had no idea. I feel like I was lied to. This is in a podcast where we talk about the Cats movie, but I don't know. I'm still upset about
it. All the years that I had to be subjected to James Corden, I was like, well, at least he's gay.
Yes.
Because I was like,
same. And I saw that movie. Oh God, it was another horrible musical with Nicole Kidman in it. It was like for Netflix or something. And it was like about the gay kid in the Midwest. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Prom.
Yes. And he plays a gay guy in that. And that was around when I found out that he was straight. And then I was like, this movie's insane. Why is he in this? Like, I feel crazy now. Like, why is he doing this?
I was like, you know, he's Ricky Gervais, but gay.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's, you know, I hate him, but mm-hmm. I can live mm-hmm. with that. Mm-hmm.
Sadie knows two British people.
What? You're going to tell me that he's not like Ricky Gervais? You're going to sit there and you're going to lie to me?
Sadie encounters Judi Dench and she's like, this is giving me...
This is like Ricky Gervais, but a woman. Is anyone else going? Real Boss Baby vibes from Judi Dench. Yeah. No, I understand it. They have a similar defensive energy where they feel like they're already picking a fight with you before anything's happened. Like James Corden and Ricky Gervais both have that projected defensive energy in all things that they do, which I think is part of how he's gotten away with playing gay for so long, because like nobody wants to fight him on it or something. He just...
I despise him.
He just sings loudly in their face until they're like, well, fine, you can have the role, I guess. I don't know. Just get out of here.
Thank you. Thank you to the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost that he was not in this movie. And
God.
Good night, New York. It's been great.
I don't know how we got on that. I'm sorry.
So I think that the thing that I was most disappointed in is that it didn't because I think that there's a lot. I'm like cutting myself off. What am I doing?
There's so much to get to.
If they had focused on like additional problems that came up in the marriage between Amy Adams and Patrick Dempsey, I think that could have been interesting. Like there's a lot to still work through. Like, you know, maybe she is just having trouble adjusting. Like he, you know what I mean? Like if they had focused on that instead of the quite frankly weak plot line of her and Morgan, who like was, I don't know. It just could have been, or just both, have him more involved in general.
Yeah. I feel like...
And it would have been so much better.
I feel like the biggest problem is how long it took for this movie to get made. So the Wikipedia on this is pretty interesting because it was first greenlit in 2010. So that's, I think the first movie came out in 2007. And so that's only a few years afterward. And the first movie was apparently quite successful, which I didn't realize. I thought I was the only person who went to see it in cinemas multiple times. I was the only person I knew who did that. But other people also loved it. So it was successful enough to merit a sequel. But I think even in 2010, they were like, there's not a lot of places we can go here. Like, that movie really wraps itself up. And
so don't make it.
So don't make the freaking sequel. But instead, what happened is from 2010 to the present day, the movie just kept getting workshopped over and over. Like, there have been multiple different screenwriters attached. There are probably like 10 different Disenchanted scripts floating around, which it would be fascinating to read those. And I'm sure that when Amy Adams and Patrick Dempsey were younger, there was like a Newlyweds version of the script, you know, where it was like, oh, things are not going well for these two. And then that they aged out of that. And then eventually it became, okay, maybe she's not getting along with Morgan. And then at some point it became whatever the heck we just saw, which feels like multiple ideas kind of cut and pasted together into an abomination that should never have existed. And we watched
Chat
it.
ChatGPT wrote this
it
movie.
It feels like that's the case. It feels uncanny. I also wanted to say, probably my biggest issue with the movie is that I feel like at the end of Enchanted, Giselle no longer has magical powers. Like, over the course of that movie, they do a lot to show that she's losing them. And when she runs into James Marsden again and they sing to each other, there's no backing track, for example. Like, she is becoming a part of the regular world, and that's her choice. And it's about, you know, her coming of age and realizing that romance can be different from the fairy tale she expected. Like, it is a parable, in my view. It's a very simple one, but that's the point of the film. So then to show that 15 years later, she can summon cockroaches and like sing and dance with construction workers, like just every fucking day of her life. I'm like, has this been going on for 15 years? Because that's bonkers. And
like,
also,
how bad could things be if she's gotten, I mean, man, she's talking to the pigeons.
Powers. Like, how bad could anything ever be? Because apparently she never stopped being the bubbly princess that in the first movie she had explicitly decided she didn't want to be. And that it just undoes something that I saw as being so key to the first movie and takes away what made it interesting on any level at all. I'm so upset by it.
I think that you're all very right in talking about how its downfall is that it tries to smash too many half-baked ideas together into something that doesn't fit correctly, you know? I actually liked the shift in focus. About it being more about Giselle and Morgan's relationship rather than, I mean, Patrick Dempsey, he can just be there. That's fine. I'm not even that concerned. But it did feel, it ended up being so trite, you know, and I guess that, you know, I thought that it was going to be more about Giselle, like passing the power on, you know, which they sort of did, you know, like, but a little bit more about, because they set it up strongly at the beginning that Giselle still has this kind of, she's the, you know, naive princess brain or whatever. And she doesn't really understand sarcasm. She doesn't understand what Morgan is going through as a teenager in the real world, because that wasn't her teenage experience at all. And so I think that, the frustration about seeing that there could have been something really well done there, you know, with where they kind of come in seeing where you need to, I don't know. And the whole thing about where her being overbearing and embarrassing Morgan at school, trying to make her popular and realizing where she needs to sort of step back out of the spotlight and be the support for her daughter, you know, or something like that. And again, the whole thread with, you know, Maya Rudolph and the son, that there was a situation like that set up that there could have been a story about the overbearing parents realizing that they need to let their teens have some agency and step back.
Yes.
And yeah, it kind of
writes itself, I think.
And so that's why Love Power was so disappointing, because I did just reflexively tear up watching tears in Amy Adams' eyes, because I've got to give her props. Like,
she does deserve props for that moment, because she is so good at singing while crying. Like, that's a skill.
Damn. And that, like, I was so confused when she started, like, when the trope started hitting, when the world turned fairy tale world and she was, like, transforming into a wicked stepmother. I was like, what the fuck is happening when she first snapped into wicked mode, you know? Mm-hmm. But it was very fun. I see why somebody on the multiple rounds of rewrites wanted to do that, because it was mm-hmm. a lot of fun to watch Amy Adams snap back and forth between, like, oh, like the squirrels. Yeah. And then, you know, into like her wicked low mode,
voice. Yeah, that was cool to hear her changing, modulating her voice to the point where I was like, wow, she sounds so different. Amy Adams, pretty good actor.
Amy Adams, she carried this movie on her puffy sleeved shoulders. Like, really, she did.
I know.
This movie should have been about, this is going to be out of left field, Robert experiencing erectile dysfunction. You can keep...
You're like, bear keep, with me. Bear with me.
You can keep Love Power, even, as a song.
What?
But I just feel like... all the family stuff is so botched and Patrick Dempsey is so underused in both movies that it's like, no, this movie should be about his struggle.
I don't know that I disagree, except with the erectile dysfunction part. That's really, I don't know where you're getting that. I mean, the man just sired a child and you're saying he's having trouble getting it up.
I mean, maybe him that's trying the problem. To slay the dragon and mm-hmm. yeah.
He did take out a
James Marsden that was, giving him a sword. Was that anything?
Yes.
James Marsden was like, I hear you're having dick problems.
The wishing wand.
There's a wand.
Oh,
you know,
my God.
I will say, I will admit, I did laugh multiple times at James Marsden in this film. Like, he's
delightful.
Funny. I don't even think anything he said was a well-written line, but his delivery was really great. Like, he would just put an inflection on a bizarre syllable and just give 1,000% with his body language in ways that make him seem like an animated character in real life. And it's just, I don't know, him and Amy Adams both really nailed that, which is part of why the original movie is still such a favorite of mine. And you can see kind of glimpses of it in this one that are James Marsden good.
At the end, when he and loud singing Chicky are back, Idina Menzel, in the park.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, everybody's sort of having the happy ending in the park and stuff. And Patrick Dempsey doesn't even want the sword anymore by then, as we mm-hmm. recall, Samantha. But anyway, there's like a little scene of James Marsden like play sword fighting with some kids. And you can tell he's just like having the time of his life. And mm-hmm. yeah, anyway, Justin happened to come home and walk into the room like right at that moment and was like, what the fuck is going on? What are you watching? And I was like, you know, I really think that James Marsden just has this energy about him as this character, like he sells that so well, that if he did just turn up to any random park as we see here and this is how he's acting and how he comports himself and speaks, everybody would just be like, okay, that's that guy, and roll with it, you know, because he seems like a lot of fun to be around, even in his mm-hmm. you know, in his prince mode, more so than Patrick yeah. Dempsey. I'm still on the other guy thing from the first movie. She really should have gone for James Marsden. They seem like he and Idina Menzel have a better life in fairy tale land.
Absolutely. Absolutely, they do.
When Amy Adams wishes to be the queen, does that just mean she gets the crown? Why would the guards attack her if she's wished herself to be the queen?
Great question. And you know, that and so many other questions.
They're Maya Rudolph's personal guards that she funded.
Why does Maya Rudolph want to kill her again?
I don't know. Why does Maya Rudolph cast the sleeping spell on Morgan that lasts for about 2 seconds and then Morgan's awake again and then they break the wand but then the wand's still usable? Why do any of those events transpire?
You guys are all asking fantastic questions. Unfortunately for you, the movie was bad. So we'll never know.
Remember the talking scroll? That was also there. There was a scroll in this movie.
He popped up and like
talk.
Said something. I'm like, oh God, Disney.
You mean the map?
Disney's got a Disney Dora? Here. When the squirrel wakes up and realizes that he can, or the chipmunk, whatever he is, he's a chipmunk, and realizes he can talk in the real world because now it's fairy tale world, he immediately has to make some crack about his sciatica. And mm-hmm. yeah, the comedy wasn't as sharp
nope.
in this
nope.
outing.
It was not. It was not good. I did like the little squeaky chipmunk voice that he did when he wasn't magical yet. That was really cute. But then he went back to talking again, and that was upsetting, and I didn't like it. Why did he have little chipmunk babies? Single dad.
Yeah.
Kind of an interesting story.
Again, another good
there.
Question. What's that? Because it was like with, Princess Pip Bride setup. That he was like reading the story to
it's
the
like,
child.
It's like that's yet months. Another element where it's like, and he's reading the story. It's like they added in everything. They said no to nothing. Every piece remained on the board.
You know, even the child chipmunks were confused about it, Maddie, because he was reading the original enchanted story to them. And they were all like, happily ever after, like repeating it along. Yes. Right? Like, and then
and they
suddenly,
kind of made the joke where he was like, yeah, nothing happens after you get married. And I was like, yeah, okay. Incisive critique and all. But
then he's suddenly like, actually, that's not where the story ends. And they're like, what? Like, you've read this story like hundreds of times. Why would he sit on this until this particular
like shocking reveal? But he's like, by the way, I did some other crazy shit. Before you
found some fan fiction on the internet.
They were also bored by the Love Power song because at the end of the second tale that we just watched unfold, they were both asleep.
Yes, yes. I mean, who knows when they fell asleep? But yeah, they were put to sleep by the film. Which, what does that tell you? What does that tell you? Tells you they don't want to hear it again, that's for sure. Watching this movie a second time was so grim. I kept pausing it and being like, what am I doing with my life? I was having a real Robert experience where I was like, I'm riding the train over and over and over. It's... I love your podcast. That's why.
Maddie, how are you dealing with it though? Because Enchanted for you, like,
I know,
like, was like how Avatar 1 was for a lot of people. You
were
like,
I know. I'm not doing well. I do feel, and this is irrational, but I do feel a little bit like Enchanted is retroactively ruined by this movie existing. And I'm going to like need some time to process that and accept that this movie doesn't need to be a part of my personal canon. Like, I have to like go through some Star Wars prequels levels of like reimagining myself in the Enchanted fandom and being like, it's okay to not acknowledge the sequel. Like, that's not real. It can't hurt you. Giselle doesn't still have magic powers and didn't inexplicably have them for 15 years and also have no relationship with her daughter in that time that made any sense. Like, why have they not worked out some of these things in the 15
this
years?
This is the first time they've spoken.
It's bizarre where, like, okay, I get it. You know, she's starting to be more rebellious and sarcastic. That's new. But, like, the whole thing where Giselle goes to her school with the cupcakes and everything, it's like, that's a kink you work out way earlier on where she's like, no, mom, like, this isn't socially acceptable in our world for you to be doing these kinds of things. Like, that would have been something that I feel like Morgan would have put a damper on far earlier in their relationship.
Morgan is like the coolest headed person in that section of the movie, at least before Fairy Tale Land arrives, because my God, what 15-year-old who is already upset and angry about all of this is going to run into their embarrassing stepmother loudly selling cupcakes and yelling at everyone to vote for them as princess of the festival at their new school and respond as quietly and calmly about it.
Well, like, I guess that part does suggest that they've had these run-ins before. I mean, I guess I'll give credit to Morgan there that she's like, this again, this is my horrifying childhood where my mom has magic powers and uses them to make bizarre displays of affection towards me that I don't need or want because I'm trying to assert my independence as an adult. I don't know. Also, there's nowhere else she can buy clothes. She has to wear these horrible dresses that don't suit her at all. And
oh God, like, look, yeah. And who is
unimaginably
gonna, like, force
bad on this poor actress
kid to go to like to their first day of school in a new place wearing like some dorky, like middle-aged whatever clothes? Like, no, like, run that child over to the, I don't know, take her to the Target.
Like, this is the,
like,
time for fast fashion, people. Like,
You know, all I do wonder. I think Maddie, actually, there's like maybe some weird the Marvel WandaVision comparison has got me thinking about that explanation that Giselle so casually gives at the end about only the person who wielded the magic remembers it clearly. Mm. Everyone else, it's like a dream or whatever. Giselle, like, how many times have you pulled some truly fucked up stuff like this and just nobody remembers? That was very, that kind of raised all the hairs on the back of my neck.
Right. Like, Giselle is now retroactively a terrifying villain who knows not what she does. Like, she is just this magical being who has entered into our world and is just wreaking havoc on people's lives without a care. And, and that's sort of depicted as low stakes joviality in the first one. Like, her magic only goes so far. But of course, in this one, it's very destructive. But I feel like the larger implication there is what Jen is suggesting, which is how often is she just using magic to fix various household problems and to just always be this perfect homemaker? Like, that depiction of motherhood is kind of distressing as well, where like it's somehow never that hard for her in any real way. And like the worst thing that's ever happened to her is that one time her 15-year-old got mad at her and was like, "You're not my real mom, you're my stepmom." Like, what's been going on up to now? Like, I don't know. It makes Giselle seem like both a very thin character and also kind of a terrifying one, who is like, you know, thanks to the help of the cockroaches, just constantly keeps this perfect clean house at all times, and she doesn't have a job and she doesn't need one. But like, I don't know. It's a very unsettling depiction of femininity in ways that I feel like the first movie, it's like a trap it didn't fall into, because the first movie is trying to specifically interrogate how unrealistic those standards are by inviting the Disney princess into the real world and being like, here's why that's uncanny and unsettling and bad, actually, and like can't exist here and would be unhealthy if it did. But like, this movie cannot and wrestle
it
with
was
that
doing a whole like overthrowing of the stepmom thing, that like, oh, she's gonna be a stepmom. So, and I was fine with having like some whatever, do some little plot haberdashery, whatever, and you know, do the wicked stepmom thing, like once they're in fairy tale land, if that's like part of the tropes and the rules and it's like possessing her. But that was kind of an little like dagger there before the fairy tale land thing happens.
Right.
And yeah, Morgan calls her stepmom and she reacts like that's the worst insult. You know, it's like, not so smooth.
I guess it's just kind of like, if you look at what the original movie is, it's like, it's so nice that it ended on that note, because it's like, we don't really know what Giselle's going to be like. Like, we don't know if she's going to maybe like start some kind of business. Like, maybe she's wanting to create, maybe she creates like an atelier, like a dressmaking business.
Yeah, like, I feel like they do show that in the end credits, like her making the dresses and stuff. Yeah, I think you're right.
Oh,
I think
God,
you're
yes.
right. And that does
like,
happen.
What the fuck happens with that? Like, I don't know. I just like, they just kind of like drop all of that and it just doesn't make sense. I don't know. None of it made sense. But that's me.
So Morgan should have moved back to New York. Is this our true ending? Or other guy is New York for Morgan? She should go to NYU.
I mean, she can bring the little boy along if she wants to.
He has two lines. I don't know him. I literally don't know him. I can't even vote for that.
All we know about him is he comes with a whole suitcase full of baggage with a mother.
So does she, to be fair. Like,
that is true.
I don't know what her life has been up to this point, and it is terrifying to imagine it, truly.
Let's see. Oh, I have one more positive thing to say about the movie. So in the nature of balance,
please.
I will also say that I was distracting myself at points in the middle of the viewing by noting how delighted all of the extras were, especially the ones who got a little singing line. They were definitely all like getting their lives, getting to dress up in a little fairy tale Ren Fair outfits and run around with Patrick Dempsey. So I love that for them. I'm very happy for them all.
I'm not. I'm cold and dead inside. Am I allowed to give zeros? I guess I can give a one.
I was going to give a zero. I give a zero. out of five carts that people are pushing around a market on a Southern California soundstage. nothing redemptive about this experience at all. I truly hated every minute of my life I spent watching it.
It was awful, and I'm so sorry. I give it zero dragons that weren't shown for budgetary reasons. Because remember, there wasn't a dragon.
Oh, that's why the dragon was only in the
cave. I don't know why. It was weird.
I will give it. I am going to give it 1.5 house cleaning cockroaches out of 5.
Because the cockroaches are cute. It's fair.
The cockroaches were cute. Don't kill me. I am going to bump it up to 2 just because I loved that house. And that's all I'll say. And also, it's like, it wasn't the worst. It was better than this, than Amazon Cinderella. And that's all I'll say. Like, it wasn't egregious to me. It wasn't The Ugly Truth. It was fine.
Yeah, that's true. It wasn't actively oppressive against all that we hold dear. It's just that it's not good.
It's just like, if this were a standalone movie, I would view it differently. It'd be like, okay, this is like, whatever, this is fine. But because it comes from such great source material and like actively, well, Harriet's scratching on the scratching post. I'm so sorry. That's what she thinks about it. As an Amy Adams fan, she was not into it. But yeah, 1.5 to 2 little house cleaning cockroaches.
Cute.
I am going to be a little bit more generous. I am going to give it 1 full star for Amy Adams herself, another star for James Marsden, and then we can have, a quarter to a half star, somewhere in between there, somewhere not quite 2.5 for the extras having so much fun in the background, and for some of the costuming. But I didn't realize, I think that I can answer, Maddie, your wonderings at the very beginning why people were, just tended to give this an easy 7 of 10 or 3.5 or 5 or whatever. Because having not watched the original Enchanted in a long time, and had that fresh in my mind and seeing the ways that it, that this conflicted with it. And just that this isn't typically my genre of movie, I think that I was actually inclined to go a little bit easier on it because I was like sort of expecting, to not like be into the songs and stuff. But then after like talking to you all and thinking about it further, I was worried before we recorded today that I wouldn't have anything to say because it was sieving back out of my brain so quickly. None of the songs really stick with you. So I think that it's only fair to warn you that if you are like a musical lover who is really into the genre, that you are probably going to be more disappointed than you would if you're just somebody like me who is kind of scared when Idina Menzel starts singing directly at you.
Well, but also I think this movie, I mean, it's almost not fair for me as somebody who's so familiar with Enchanted to even try to rate it, because I think you're right, Jen, that most people watched it and didn't really remember Enchanted or didn't feel some sort of personal connection to it, because I was very depressed when I watched it and I really dug it and was single and was like, what do I think about romantic relationships and who the fuck am I? And I really liked that this movie was taking apart all of those tropes. And then to have the sequel be so just insipid and like nothing and just so airy and just it's
milk
cotton
toast,
candy. It's just garbage. And it's like, that's fine for a kid's movie. And I think probably people did enjoy it on that level. But I'm like, I expected some freaking trope skewering, like I expected to have some thoughts in my brain and also laugh at some good jokes. And that's just
not the
case for this.
What we know they're capable of from the first movie. And, I'm kind of a low-key Amy Adams stan. And
I know, I love her.
Yeah. Like stories about midlife right now,
Yes.
And so it was disappointing to see this teed up with such an opportunity and then for it to be so shallow and wishy-washy and not really, it didn't really deliver a message at all. Love power. None of us knew that love had power before. Yeah.
Memories are the most powerful magic of all, except for love power, which is also
and wishing. And don't let James Marsden give your baby a wishing wand. That's a bad gift for an infant anyway.
Give the wishing wand at all? Terrible idea. Like, what's that baby going to do with that wand? Don't give a baby a wand.
Unless it's a boss baby. Then. Maddie, where can people find you and your work? Or just your work, not you personally.
I'm not going to give my address out on the 10 show.
10 miles outside of Boston in a broken down Dunkin' Donuts.
If you can find that canyon, I will be there hiking that because it's definitely real, and I'll be getting a latte from Dunk's right after. But you can find me on the internet at Middie Myers, MIDIMYERS, on every social media platform, and MiddieMyers.com. Those are my places.
And Jen, what fictional suburb should people move? You should see the other guy too.
I think they should move us to West Covina because I think we would have a better time there than we would in Monrovia or whatever this one was.
Yeah.
West Covina, a real place.
Also a musical place, so, you know.
The worst songs in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend were better than every song in Disenchanted.
That song about the Santa Ana winds, I still sing so regularly around the house. And I don't even live in a place that's like very affected by the Santa Ana winds. It's just the power of the song.
That song's good.
Oh, but you can find us on patreon.com/YSSDOG. And is one of us still checking our Twitter?
Sometimes.
Anyway, you can find us.
I dabble.
At YSSTOG. We may or may not find you when we check it. We still love you and hope that you talk to us there.
Great. Great stuff.
We know that Sadie's a villain because she's consorting with her cat sidekick Familiar right now, according to the rules of Disenchanted.
She's crunching and munching right by me. I would like to thank our lovely, wonderful Patreons who we would not trap in an eternal fairy tale against their will. Logan, Andrew, Sharon, Justin, Evan, Ace, Mara, Raimi the Void Heartleaf, Ave with Teeth, Ryan, Maddie, Brian, and Brianna. Thank you all so very much.
You're welcome.